This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
We take you now to Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York to hear an address by Dr. Raymond Charles Barker at the Sunday morning religious science service.
Good morning. We are of one mind, one accord, in one place, and we are receptive to new ideas. Because new ideas are the answer to our evolution, our progress, our creativeness, that which yet will be done. And there are too few people these days that have new ideas. Most of the people you know are thinking exactly as they did 10 years ago. They could be called 1962 people, as far as their thinking is concerned. Now, they're working in a range of a 1972 calendar, with 1962 outmoded old ideas that are repetitive, monotonous, going over and over again. But not you, and not me. We are the people who want the fresh, the new, the different. We are those who want to move ahead, progress, evolve, proceed. And you cannot do it by the repetition of that which you have already known. You can only do it when there is an inspiration, an intuition, when something new and fresh and clean inspires you and enervates you and makes you a new person. So I'm going to take this morning, as you know, I'm talking on a new definition of God, and I'm going to take this morning to make us all new people. And I'm willing to be made new, and I'm sure you are also. All right, let us relax a minute and take this into our minds. That there is one cause, one God, one spirit, one truth, one intelligence, one inspiration, one intuition. Each one of us has this. Each one of us is this. For we are the creation of an infinite something that knows exactly what it's doing, knows how to do it, is doing it, and is doing it in us. So right now, we are open and receptive to new ideas, new motivations, new thoughts, new feelings, to everything that is fresh. At the same time, our subconscious minds are willing to let go of that which has been, that which has served its time, that which has completed its cycle, with that which is finished business. So we release the old, we welcome the new, remembering that wonderful statement, "Behold, I make all things new, saith the Lord." So we are the new people in the new age, in the new spiritual consciousness, in a new framework. For this we rejoice, give thanks, and are glad, because we are new. So it is. Shall we, who are here this morning at Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center, turn to our third inside page of the program, to sing new words, not new as far as time goes, but new words to most of the audience. And again, I'm going to read the second verse. We got three letters this week saying, "Thank heavens you read the second verse, because I've memorized the first verse and I sing with you on radio, but I never knew the second verse, and you finally gave us the second verse." So, to those good friends and to others, I'm going to read the second verse of our song. "We clear the heart of hatred. We clear the mind of fear. We speak no word of censure of all we see or hear. With love to guard and guide us, with mind to light the way, we build a new tomorrow on the site we clear today. However, as we stand in a moment and sing, we will start with the first verse, not the second. All right, shall we stand and sing this with authority? The reason I'm speaking this morning on the topic which I have chosen, today's definition of God, is because in the last 6 months I've been getting a great deal of letters from our radio audience saying, you never use the word God. And I write back and say, well, if you have a cassette tape, play it again with a notebook and you'll discover that I do use the word God. At least three times in every Sunday morning lecture. Now, the greatest single hurdle in functioning in today's spiritual thinking is your definition of God. Because most of us have cast off the old definition, and many of us have not replaced it with a new definition. In other words, many people know what God isn't, but they're not sure what God is. I'd like to say that the reason I use the word God less and less is not because I'm the least bit angry with God. Not at all. I'm not even angry with the term. I don't use it for a very simple reason, that when you use it, and I use it, it is a tendency to take us back to whatever was our concept of God as a child. It's like you never hear me use the word Father in relationship to God. Now, I know that Jesus did it, or at least our records show that he did it, but that again is a word that psychologically takes you to the past. That's why years ago I stopped saying I was the son of God, because my subconscious mind said, you're the son of George and Harriet Barker. Yeah. And whenever I use the word father, they said, oh, you mean George. You know, oh, you mean George. And then I went through a phase of the father, mother God, and my subconscious said, oh, you mean George and Harriet. You see. Because your subconscious mind is going to interpret what your conscious mind is thinking. Remember, this is always true. The subconscious mind interprets what the conscious mind is thinking. And it interprets it in terms of the past. Because the subconscious mind is a past mind. It is a collective unconscious. And it is It is not aware of the present instant in time. It is aware only of that which has been, that which has been done, that which has been accomplished, and so forth. So the tendency when you use the word God is to go back to your old concept and the man in the sky and all the rest. Now that's why I use it as little as possible, because of its meaning in the subconscious mind. Now you're going to say, well, all right, then what terms do we use? Well, as you know, my favorite term for it is infinite mind. Merely that creation gives evidence of intelligence. The intelligence of the manifest universe indicates that whatever created it was intelligence. And if the cause back of it all was intelligence, then it had to be mind. It couldn't be person. It couldn't be a situation or condition. It had to be a mind creating out of itself. And so in most of the talks I give, and in most of the writings I write, I use the term an infinite intelligence, an infinite mind, and so forth. Now, if you wanted to be philosophical, you could call it the first cause. That has no warmth to it. Even the word mind has more warmth than the word cause. So when you deal with the first cause, it doesn't evoke a feeling with it. It may sound reasonable to the mind, but it hasn't any glamour. Shall I use that term? It hasn't any glamour. It doesn't invoke a feeling of grandeur or creation continuing or whatever it might be. So for me, I like the word an infinite mind as my modern definition of God. Now, some people may say, why do we need a modern definition of God? Well, for the simple reason, we're having a new definition of everything else. This mental and emotional spiritual revolution, which is going on, not just here but everywhere, is causing redefinition, new definitions of everything. Not just of God, but of the individual. You and I think of ourselves quite differently today than we did 30 years ago, 20 years ago. They're all new definitions. The individual today is important. 50 years ago, the individual was not important. The collective unit was important. And as I've said so often, 50 years ago, you celebrated religion collectively. Today, this is lessened down to almost nothing. Almost nothing. And I had a questionnaire, a very lengthy one, sent to me today, not this past week, by the National Council of Churches, and asking what I answer questions as to what is the future of the church as a church organization. I'm not going to tell you what I said because I'm on radio. So the gentleman who called me said, would I do this? They were sending these out to thousands of churches, clergymen rather. Would I do it? And I said, yes, but I don't think you're going to like what I'm going to say. And he said, well, that's good. He said, it's time we had somebody once in a while, and I'm sure they do because there are many liberals, that said what they really... So I said, I'm going to write down what I really believe, and after you've read it, if there's a wastebasket nearby, feel free to use it. Feel free to use it. So I'm answering the questions. It'll take about 3 days, I think, to do so. Because here again, you have to have a redefinition. A redefinition. I wonder if you realize that the word church, which, as you know, we've dropped from our program, that the word church in its original Greek meaning, the one as used by Paul, we'll say, and the early people of the New Testament, that word church comes from the word ecclesia, meaning a very interesting word, the called out ones. The called out ones. Isn't that interesting? Because that's not what we traditionally think of as being the church. The called out ones. Not the put in ones. Not the standing still ones. Not those who are sure they are right. But rather the called out ones. And when I first learned that many, many years ago, I said, all right, then I can see where the church word church is acceptable to me, if it means that. And as you know, we've used it low these many years, dropping it only recently. Now, here again is a redefinition. The called out ones, meaning those who see a larger vision, those who are illuminated by a larger light, those who know they are not absolutely right. You know, people say to me, well, Dr. Barker, is religious science the answer to everything? I said, of course not. Nothing's the answer to everything. Any religious system that claims to be the answer to everything is wrong by the very fact that they state that. Because there's no one answer. You cannot have individuality and have one answer. You cannot have this spontaneous something and have it exactly the same for every person. Can't be. And so we're back to the definition now. There is something which creates out of itself. That's our first basic statement. There is something which creates out of itself. And that something which creates out of itself probably can never be known, but can be sensed in part. The mystics have always spoken of the presence of God as something that they could not explain, but they could feel. And I don't mean feel in the way that you and I feel an object. It is an interior awareness, which to the mystic is of primary importance, because they sense that back of everything is that which is forever changing, forever evolving, forever expanding, and they want to flow with it. Now that's what we're trying to do, and we're not claiming to be mystics. The time may come when we will be looked upon as mystics. I don't know. It doesn't matter. There is that which is creating, evolving, expanding, and in order to flow with it, we have to think in its language. We have to feel in its feeling. We have to recognize that nothing is finished, nothing is completed, that everything is in a state of flux. Now, this is what your friends and neighbors don't want to believe. See, the human mind wants everything clear-cut. Wants everything clear-cut. They want it definite. They want it specific. They want to be able to draw a circle around it, and they want to say, that's that. And that's what they're doing. But that's not what I'm trying to do. Now, we have to deal with the fact world. You cannot ignore it. And we're dealing with the factual world. But the factual world is not a fact. It is something that is moving, something that is flowing, something that is energy, vitality, and you may want to use the word vibration. It is something beyond fact. That's why the great spiritual minds have said it was that which could never be defined, that which could never be totally known, that which could never be totally experienced. You see, that's what we're dealing with. Now again, the neighbor, the friend says, but is that practical? You know, everybody wants to be practical. Well, for one Sunday, let's not try and be practical. I'll try next Sunday to be practical. Furthermore, any of you that have been around here very long know that it's very, very practical. It's very practical. You can use it in every element and phase of life. But don't box it up. Don't hem it in with definitions. If you tried to describe what you call your individual life to another person, you probably would soon run into difficulties. What is it that I mean by being, by saying I am alive? Well, you could use the old Descartes idea, I think, therefore I am, which is one way of saying it. Because when I use the word life, I am not using the word as I interpret it in my physical body. I might do that at the animal kingdom level or the vegetable kingdom level. But the word life is not a movement through a body alone. That's probably the least important sense of the word. I am alive. So I glance at my body in a mirror. I move an arm or I move a leg. I may adjust my position in the chair and say, yes, I'm alive. But that is a definition which means I am not, I'm still in the body. I'm still here. I haven't departed this place yet. See, I can move an arm, I can move a leg, I can adjust in the chair, I can walk down the street, I can do this, meaning I'm still here. And yet, as anyone would realize, life is not that at all. And so in our field, we say that life is consciousness. Now here again, unless you're familiar with the word consciousness, that doesn't mean anything. Now, we use the word consciousness all the time. And as you know, in the dictionary, it means awareness. We are conscious of. We are aware of. We are thinking, feeling, livingness, receiving the impression of the universe around us through our five senses, and deciding what these impressions are to us. Because we are always interpreting the information that comes to the mind through the senses. That's why, if you note on the back of your program, we have a booklet outside called The Five Routes to Heaven, or the five senses that are bringing the information which we then interpret, which we then decide what it is. And so, if you're going to have a garden wedding, a thunderstorm is a catastrophe. But if you are a farmer who's had a drought, the thunderstorm is heaven. Merely because it depends upon the interpretation. And so the garden wedding is held indoors. And as far as the marriage is concerned, it's equally effective or ineffective, whether it's in a garden or in a house or in a church or wherever it may be. Because marriages are not made by a man in a black suit with a little book in his hand, facing a radiant groom and a beautiful bride, with mama on one side and mama on the other side. That doesn't make a marriage, it's necessary legal form. So, all right, the redefinition. What is the infinite and what am I? And what am I doing? Because if all I am doing is to last out 90 years with a stack of paid bills, I might just as well quit now. You know, who needs that? You know, I wished I'd saved a copy of every bill I've paid since the age of, what, 15. I imagine it would fill this entire stage. How about your paid bills? I'm not asking you about your unpaid ones, I'm asking about your paid ones. I think they'd stack up pretty high. So, now, does this stack of paid bills and accomplishments, because it's more than that, why am I alive? Because I have to express myself. And why do I have to express myself? Because I was created to express myself. Now again, psychologically, there are very few people who really express themselves. They are expressing other people, parents, important people who have influenced their lives, teachers and all the rest. And yet here again, the new definition requires that if I'm alive, and I'm alive for the purpose of self-expression, and if that which caused me to be is what I am, well then I'm off in a great field of new creative thinking. And this new field of creative thinking is fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because it takes my mind off that which has become an accomplished fact and injects into my mind that which yet shall be. That which yet shall be. It'd be fascinating 100 years from now if you and I could get a glimpse of down here, wherever it is and wherever we are, and see what is taking place in the next 100 years. It'd be fascinating. We may not like it all. There are many things going on today that we don't like, but nevertheless, there they are, and they're changing. The eternal movement of consciousness, forever outpicturing itself, both at the individual and the group level. So we are individuals, we are life, we are self-expression. We are a means by which a larger thought can be thought. A larger feeling can be felt. A new something can be born. The eternal process of birth and the eternal process of death. And I am not speaking now of the physical body's birth or death. I'm speaking of that consistent action of consciousness wherein the new is forever appearing and the old is forever going. And you and I are in this process. And we are wise enough to welcome that which comes and to release that which goes. Because if we are a today person in a today experience, then we are no longer the child, we are no longer the teenager, we are no longer the psychological explanation. We are that which is experiencing, that which is appearing, and that which is disappearing. And so as I quoted earlier, that statement, that the old things shall pass away. Behold, I make all things new, saith, whatever word you want, the Lord, it says. Because we are in process. We are a process in process. We are not a man or a woman going to a job only, running a home only. It is true, we do this. But that probably is the least important reason for our existence. I cannot believe that an infinite intelligence created me merely to collect and dust things, to buy food and cook it and serve it, to work, pay my bills, save a little money. Because if that's all there is to it, as I said earlier, I'd quit right now, which I won't. And so, the wise, the mystic, the great spiritual teachers have always said there was more to life than living. And we most certainly say that here every week. There is more to me and to you than just the function of this body, the everyday thinking of this mind, the everyday feeling of my emotions. There's more to it than that. And that which is the more to it is the indefinable. Yet, we know it's there. We know it's so. We know it's true. And this is why every mystery can be known in part, but probably never known in full. So people say, well, the universe is a mystery. Yes. And our scientists, with all that they know and all that they're knowing, realize they've only just started. They've only just started. With all of the investigation, whether it be of the atom or the cosmos, they go right on investigating because of the eternal unknowable that can be progressively known. That would be true of you, of myself. Because we are that eternal unknowable that can be partially known. So the great writer said, now I see in part, but then I shall see in full. I don't know where the then is. Because I'm sure this goes right on the same routine. Wherever we are, whether we are here now or wherever we are 1,000 years from now, we shall always be searching to know a little more about the unknown and about the great mysteries of life. So why did whatever life is create this type of body? How come? I suppose originally we went around on all fours. But we had sense enough later to gradually stand up, evolve, and change body structure. It took millions of years, but we did it. And so I look at people, and they're walking, they're moving, they're functioning, but the way they're doing it, they might just as well be back there on all fours. Because they live to eat, they live to get through a day, they live to get their bills paid them each month, and that's about all they're doing. They might just as well be on all fours and have somebody else feed them. I've often wished I was a happy dog. And I get chucked under the chin, and I get patted on the head. I get fed tidbits. I be told how wonderful I was. They could take me walking on a leash 3 times a day. Be a very simple life. Now, may I add, I'm glad I'm not a dog. I'm glad that I am walking upright. But it makes us think. Something did it by means of us. Something did it to us by means of us. Something caused all this. And if you go back in any field of anthropology, the great wonder is why? And this the anthropologist does not answer. Why did a species such as man arise? They're very careful not to answer. Because in the academic field, you cannot get into spiritual conclusions. They may have them personally, but they cannot speak it out or write it out. Why is it that a species known today as man or woman, why did this come about? Now, their answer could be by biological chance. And that, if you can accept it, I can't, but if you can, then there's your answer. Somewhere way back there, nature made a mistake. Meaning you and me. Somewhere way back there, by biological chance, so, No, I don't believe in biological chance. I believe, also I don't believe in Adam and Eve and God saying, and there was man. And I have all my ribs. And I always remember in that same story, there's no word about apple. There's not an apple mentioned in the Bible. They didn't have apples in biblical lands. The American farmer decided it was apples that caused all the trouble. It's not in any edition of the Bible. Merely says fruit. So at any rate, I tell my friends, don't eat apples, because an apple a day keeps the doctor away, and I want friends. Don't you get it? I admit it's very corny. Oh, I'll get letters on that one. Now, you well know I don't, because apples are very, very good for people. Now, to come back to this, what is this whole thing? It's undefinable, yet it can be defined in certain growing, expanding terms. What is life? What is mind? And again, with all that we have of psychology, psychiatry, psychoanalysts, we have no definition of mind as it is. We only have definitions of what it can do. There isn't a psychotherapist that can tell you what mind as mind is. There's no medical man that can tell you what health as health is. Because they can't define it. And yet you and I like to go around defining ourselves, classifying ourselves, thereby conditioning ourselves and limiting ourselves. That's what we're doing. And every self-definition is a limitation. Every self-definition is a limitation. Because it is a definition of myself at this instant only. It could be quite a different definition at 3 o'clock this afternoon, or tomorrow, or a year from now. Because I can only define myself as I know myself at the instant. And then, by so defining myself, I have put another pattern in my subconscious mind to operate. In my classwork, I often tell our students, what are you when you aren't name and number? What is God when it isn't a man on a throne in the sky? Now, your mind can go in 1,000 directions. But at least it's going in new directions. You know, at least it's going in new directions. Because you're beginning to think for yourself. And that's the hope of the world. That's individuality. When you and I individually think for ourselves and not just collectively accept an idea. Now, we may still accept the idea, but we will have thought it out. So people say, well, if everybody in the world was a religious scientist, wouldn't it be wonderful? It would be the end of everything. There'd be no reason for the infinite to keep on its creation. The minute everybody agrees, you're in hell. You haven't had a new thought. Anyway, it's never going to happen, so don't worry. We're not changing the world very much, you know. We're doing our part, but we're not doing too much. But the part we're doing is valuable. All right, and today's definition of God is that which cannot be defined but can be known. We can call it an infinite mind, a first cause. We can call it the ultimate reality, That, however, does not suit me, because whatever it is process. And whatever I am process. I am not a body of certain height and weight at all. I'm that in the outside, yes. But I am process, I am thought and feeling. I am that which is. And I need to live with that which is, not that which was, or the dream of that which will be. I am that which is, and leave the rest of it undefined. All right, so end of the lesson. And here at our religious science activity in Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center, we are now going to receive the morning collection and rejoice in the giving of you grand people. Next Sunday, being the first Sunday of the month, we will have our healing session at 10:45 before we go on the radio. So for those of you who are helped by it, and many of you tell me of the results you get from it, we cordially invite you to come early. It's a service that it isn't a service, it's a therapy, it's a treatment as we call it, which I do with you, sitting in a very casual chair over there, and we do our right thinking, our correct knowing of what we are, and we clear up a lot of problems. That's at 10:45 next Sunday morning here at Alice Tully Hall in Lincoln Center. In your program today are two new series of classes, one which I shall be giving on Monday afternoons and Tuesday evenings, an either or, and one which Stuart Grayson will be giving on Monday evenings. So, his topics are making life a success, and I'm just taking my four great standard ideas. I'm going to talk on health, wealth, love, and self-expression. So, You can come to both, or come to one, or don't come at all. But we are welcome. We'd love to have you. And if you're going to take your vacation in August, hurrah, that's good. Have a grand time. Mail us a check. We're right here anyway. I'll be speaking every Sunday in August. All right, the Wednesday evening speaker at 6 o'clock this week is the Reverend Stuart Grayson. Next Sunday, the healing meeting. And then remember that we are at the end of July and you need your August magazines. We have two magazines that we encourage all of our people to read every morning before they start the day. One is the Science of Mind magazine. The other is the one for which I write, Creative Thought magazine. So these two magazines are outside, and if any of our friends in the radio audience want them, we will mail them to you. Just send us a note saying you want them and enclose a dollar bill, because Science of Mind is 60 cents and our magazine is 35. That's 95 cents. We take the nickel for postage. That's it. So you're really getting a bargain. If you buy it here, it's only 95. So outside at the book tables, they are. And be sure you get them too. You see, if all of us work together on a single theme every morning, there is power in a collective consciousness, especially when it's creative and on a spiritual theme. So by many hundreds of us doing it every morning as we start our day, it has power. All right, the regular activities of noon lectures every day, all the books you want are there, and so forth. I'd like to say that to our radio audience in particular, all mail should be addressed to our own building, which is at 14 East 48th Street, New York, New York, and the zip is 117. Because letters which come here to Tully Hall are delayed a whole week before we get them. Now, if you want to like this morning's lecture, want a cassette of it, can be ordered. Order out at the desk outside of today, and you'll have them within a few days, because they'll be made up promptly and mailed to you. If you want cassettes of past lectures, they are available. Many of them are outside right now. And then several weeks ago, I mentioned that new cassette of mine called 13 Spiritual Treatments. 13 key ideas. It starts off with how to start the day, then one on health, one on wealth, one on love, one on self-expression, and so forth. 13 key ideas. And that cassette is $3.50, and they have plenty of them outside today, they tell me. The regular cassettes of the full hour lecture here are $5. All right, if any of you'd like a short vacation over Columbus Day, then Mr. Grace is taking 150 people to Bermuda and giving them a wonderful time at a beautiful hotel there. If you're interested, there are booklets outside on it, or we'll mail it to you if you're on radio. Now let's come back to the talk. Who and what am I? We no longer can say who is God, because we know it isn't a person. So we can say, what is God, and start these new ideas going. Something is causing something, and it isn't you and it isn't myself. I couldn't manufacture last night's sunset if I wanted to. I couldn't manufacture lots of things if I wanted to. Even a meteorologist doesn't know how to do that. He can't make a sunset. He can predict it. He can measure it, but he can't make it. You see. So I have a plant and I water it and keep it in the sun. But it grows. I don't grow it. It grows. So here are great minds all around, and they're thinking new ideas. They're thinking new ideas. New things are going to happen. New events, new gadgets, new everything. It's going to be fascinating. We're always in a world of the new. So to the gloomy people, I say, all right, you live in the world of disasters. Fine. You've chosen it. Live in it. You're going to tell me everything that's wrong about everything. Great. I'm not going to listen. I know what's going on, but I am also in a world that is new. A world that is fresh. And if mankind in general is a disaster, then you and I individually don't need to be a part of it. We can be part of that which I earlier said, the called out ones. Those who believe in a process, a livingness, a love, a joy, a beauty, a wholeness, which even if it's only for a split second, nevertheless it is. It is, and we are in it, and we are of it. It is functioning in and as that which we are. All right, we've had a good hour. So now shall we stand for our closing idea together. As we go out into a busy world, a good world, excellent weather outside, and let's walk tall, get the shoulders back, do some high-level thinking, and have some inspiration. All right? Thank you for coming, and so it is.
This Sunday morning lecture of religious science has been broadcast from Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York. Please address all letters and contributions to Dr. Raymond Charles Barker at 14 East 48th Street, New York 10017. The list of books and pamphlets is available on request. You're cordially invited to attend these lectures in person or listen again next Sunday morning at 11:05. For another broadcast of the Sunday morning lecture of religious science.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.